Voice at the Table provides practical information to ensure people with a cognitive disability have a real and equal voice on boards, committees, and advisory groups. We do this by providing training for people with an acquired brain injury or intellectual disability and through a peer-led monthly meetup. We educate organisations and government departments to use inclusive meeting practices by providing training and resources. But most importantly, VAT tries to make the world a place where everyone is equal and can participate by being given supports they need to contribute the way they want. Our board is disability-led, and our resources and training are co-produced and facilitated by people with a disability. Come check us out, voiceatthetable.com.au.
We're gathering together today in this special place to continue our learning journey together. We acknowledge the Woiwurrung and Bunurong people of the Kulin Nations as the traditional custodians of the land and waters of the place where we're recording this podcast, and that sovereignty has not been ceded. We acknowledge and pay respects to the elders past, present and emerging, and we also pay respect to any First Peoples who are listening.
We remember the self-advocates who work hard, really hard over the years for the rights for themselves and for others with a disability to live in the community and to achieve equality and to respect human rights for all. Nothing about us without us.
Nothing about us without us.
So we're on VAT Chat and we're talking about barriers with Cameron Bloomfield. One of the barriers that may not be very apparent to most people is a social barrier, being a lone self-advocate in a working group or a meeting can be quite lonely. It also gives that air of tokenism to the position as well, which is one thing that we try and avoid at all costs. I mean, as we know, our self-advocates are the experts with lived experience and should never, ever be treated as a token. What do you think some of the ways that tokenism exists in this sort of, in the meeting working group fields, Cameron?
Well, sometimes it could be, say, for example, some organisations might think, oh, if we have one person with a cognitive disability on our working group, we've achieved the goal of having a person on there, not even if he doesn't even participate in any of it, we've achieved having that person. So we're using, the person could think, oh, I don't know, I'm going to use it as a token here because I'm the only person with a disability in this group. It'd be good to have like more than one person with a disability, and also get them also to feel not like a token, get them to participate in the meeting. You know what I'm, you know, because self-advocates do have a voice and they don't want to be felt like they're just there because it's meeting a requirement of the organisation. You need to make them feel a part of the meeting and have their opinions and their advice heard within the meeting as well.
That's spot on, Cameron. That's exactly why, when, as an organisation, if you were to go to a group like Voice at the Table, they would propose that you get two advocates, because no two people have exactly the same disability. Even though it may have the same name, they may not. The way it affects them is different. Another point along that tokenism sort of thing is when you do have a representative there, but you don't actually listen to them or acknowledge that they're there. I think you have a really good example of that one.
Yes, I was involved in a working group that in one of the meetings, it was chaired by somebody else, but they've updated that they updated and got a bit better after a complaint was made. So what happened was a question was asked and I had my hand up trying to put my true say in, and I would have my hand up for ages, and the guy would be going around and asking other people, like completely miss me, and someone else had to jump in. Someone else put their hand up after me and then turned around and said, Cameron's had his hand up for ages after he went to her, and, you know, which was very, you know, not really a good on a chair side of things that to go around and miss other people if they've got their hand up, and, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a great feeling, is it? It's, I think almost all of us have experienced that in meetings that in various ways and forms. I know personally, even I was on a meeting prior to my injury where that happened, that the chair would only ask one or two people for their opinion and completely dismiss everything else. I just thought it was all lip service and not really worth it.
Yes. But I have to admit, after that happened, I got feedback from one of the people who else was in the meeting. She ended up making a complaint about it, and from the next meeting, they actually changed their procedures and they had a different chair that time, and it did work a lot better. And, you know, so they did end up changing after a complaint was made, which I have to admit, you know, it did work out better for them.
You're listening to That Chat.
One of the other barriers, well, this is the word that's most associated to barriers, is being access. And as we're sort of saying, access to information, access to the meeting physically, access to the meeting on Zoom even, they are all barriers. And there's some really varied forms of barriers. One of the ones we always pick on is jargon, and as we call it now, jargon English, rather than plain English or easy English. It can ruin a meeting when everything is in jargon. The access to supports is vital, and that can be as simple as just reminders. Hey, you've got a meeting coming up today. You know, I'll see you at 2:00. Nice and easy. You can do that. You can deal with that. Physical. You know, there are things where people may have mobility issues. They may have sensory issues as well. So physical can be more than just ramps and stairs. It is things like lights and sounds, and they can really distract from a really good meeting because someone has that sensitivity to lights or sounds, and I'm just trying to find the right words. It's sudden sounds and bright flashing lights. They can be very distracting for many people with a cognitive disability.
It's not necessarily flashing lights. It could be the room could be too light for their sensory needs. So you could be, you know, you could be in a room where it's completely lit up with big, really fluorescent lights, those things, you know, not necessarily flashing lights. So it could be, you know, really bright lights. You know, some people probably like to work in a more duller environment where you can control the lights and turn them down or up, you know, so stuff like that, you know, people, you know, do have troubles with, you know. So some people that I've gone into a meeting with, if you can't control the lights, they have to wear sunglasses because it affects them too much, you know. There's also like there's a way to sort of lessen the jargon they use. I use them a bit, called the traffic lights.
Traffic lights? What do you mean traffic lights? How do you get traffic lights in a meeting?
Well, we use three colours representing the normal traffic lights you would see when driving your car. So we've got the three colours are red, green and yellow. So the whole idea of it, say for example, with the green one, it if you hold up a green card, it means I agree and I understand. If you hold up a yellow card, I have a question. But then the one that I like the most, if you hold up the red card means that someone's used a jargon word or you're not understanding or you're not getting how the meeting's going, you know, for someone to stop and explain it to you. Every time I'm in a meeting, I always use the red card because it's instead of, say, for example, raising your hand, if I raise my hand, I might have a question to ask them, or especially in the online Zoom meetings where it's hard to know what people are thinking or people want to do. So if I've got a question, I'll just raise up my hand. But then if someone mentions it like a jargon or a hard word that I don't understand, I'll pull them up and I'll hold up a red card. You know, and...
Those of us without sight, Cameron just held up red card. That traffic light system sounds wonderful, Cameron. I really wholeheartedly endorse that one. And I think having the different colours meaning different things, well, obviously they do, but having the red is, hang on, stop, what's going on? There's something wrong here. I think is a great way of doing that, especially in the, like in the Zoom meetings, as you're saying. Personally, I was involved in AGM for a group and they were just talking in jargon the whole way. I'm pretty switched on most of the time, but I don't always know the jargon words, and they kept repeating it. And in the end, I had my hand up from the very first time, and it took them like 5 minutes into this discussion before they actually saw that I had my hand up. And I think it was someone else that had their hand said that they saw it. So it was quite different. Whereas if I had that card, I could have stopped it straight away and had that clarity right from the start of the conversation.
And it's also more noticeable, especially on Zoom meetings, that if you hold up a red card or a green card, you know, it's more noticeable than maybe holding up your hand for ages.
Yes, much more noticeable having that change of colour on your screen. And if most of us, when we are doing the Zoom meeting, tend to be in that view when you can see as many people as possible.
You can find out more, voiceatthetable.com.au.
We're moving quite quickly through all these barriers, but there is a couple of really big ones left. One of them is actually money. This is a barrier for a number of reasons. And so for some, the getting to a meeting actually costs money. They may need to book a taxi to get them there. Taxis are cheap, as we know, even with a taxi card that you get. There are working groups that actually pay you to be on board and be part of the working group, which is great. It's not done as often as I think it should be. There are a couple of working groups that I'm on and I don't worry too much about the money because I'm actually very passionate about it. So I jump in there and give my 2 cents worth as an expert with lived experience, but they're in things in fields that I'm quite passionate about. So it's quite good for me. But not getting paid and not knowing when to ask about payment is actually quite a big barrier. I think you have some, you were doing a project or something, Cameron, where money became an issue?
Yes, I was doing one project where the organiser of who got me on board didn't really state what I was getting paid, how much I was getting paid, and every time I'd ask them, they would make up excuses. So it's very frustrating because I've always been taught from when I was doing the voice at the table training that you're, since we're the ones with lived experience, it's always good to get paid and know where it is. So it's always good for organisations. One of the things when they're getting you on board is to mention, yes, you're getting paid for this, mention how much you're getting paid, and also mention it that if you'd only get paid at the end of each session, or if it goes for, say, if it goes for, say, 3 or 4 sessions, that, hey, look, is it okay if we pay you at the end of the, say, four sessions? That means we can just pay you in one lump sum instead of 4 individual lump sums. You know, it's always good for organizations to do something like that. So yeah, this one organization was always sort of dodging my questions when I'd ask them. So I had to get on the phone to somebody else who actually ended up sending an email, and it ended up getting fixed up.
Nothing about us without us.
So as the lived experience expert and being part of meetings and working groups for other organisations where you've been asked to come in, number of those sort of meetings and working groups are based around a workplace. And within that workplace, the people attending the meeting are still getting paid to be there, but you as the expert aren't always getting paid. You once told me that you don't like being mucked around. You know, just tell me straight up what something is. It was along those lines. Can you remember that, Cameron?
I do remember that, yeah. I don't like sort of being... The way as I was trained with Voice at the Table is, I don't like being mucked around. I like to be told straight as if you instead of trying to make excuses, tell me straight down the line how it is, you know, and that means I won't have to get confused or anything like that. It's also when it comes to sort of money as well, ask the person how they want to be paid, because people like to be paid in gift voucher. Like for example, myself, I like to be paid as a gift voucher, because if other people in the meeting are getting paid to be there, we as lived experience should be paid as well to attend the meeting, and that also knocks out as earlier spoken about the being a token.
Mm. You're listening to That Chat.
You've talked about how you don't like to be mucked around when it comes to money, and I'm guessing it's for the same reasons that I don't like being mucked around when it comes to money. I'm on a fixed income, being on the disability pension. It's enough to pay my bills and stuff, but if I need something else or whatever, or if I know there's a big bill coming, I would like to know in advance what I'm going to get paid in a certain time frame. I'm guessing, I'm never going to assume it's the same for everyone, but I'm guessing it's very similar for you.
Well, it is very similar for me. If I do I call them gigs. If I do a gig, a meeting or something, I assume that I'm getting some money. So I can go do shopping with that gift card that I get. I can go do this, because I plan, I try and plan in what I need to spend and that. So if I get a bill, I'll think, I can pay this bill with my pension, then I can go do shopping because I'm getting a gift card. But then if the organisation sort of stuffs you up and don't pay you, or they thought, we'll pay them at the end but didn't tell you, they don't pay at the end, so it makes things a bit hard.
It makes things very hard indeed. You know, just so some of the people listening understand, the disability pension is still below the poverty line. So just keep that in mind, people. It's not a nice place to be. And I think it, in regards to being upfront and all of that, it is very much around that, our tip about being prepared and making sure that, you know, I hate using the term, but all the boxes are ticked. And that includes things like the information regarding payments. How is it going to be paid? When is it going to be paid? It all needs to happen before the event. And that's all about being prepared.
Nothing about us without us.
One of our biggest barriers, I think, for me personally, has been a safe space to be able to provide the best I can provide as a self-advocate. We talk about being able to tell stories a lot because that's what we do as experts. We have stories that no one else has. I think creating that safe storytelling space is vital. What do you think, Cameron? Do you think I'm close to the mark with that one?
You are. Safe storytelling is vital because you want to feel safe to tell your story. You don't want to be, you know, going to somewhere and telling your story and then, you know, it gets leaked out of something of the meeting or people start asking you questions or, you know, or you've gone to the meeting thinking the meeting's one thing and then you tell your story and it's not relevant to the meeting. So it's also you've got to sort of be on top of what the meeting is about to tell your story. And also make sure there are things in place. You know, you might want to have a go-to person to talk to if you feel uncomfortable or someone that can talk to you after the meeting, see how you're feeling because you just told your story that was personal to you. So it's, you know, you just got to make sure there are things in place so people, you feel comfortable and there's, you know, so, for example, there's hotlines you can call if you're not feeling safe or, you know, after the meeting, you know, like, say, for example, the helpline or, you know, stuff like that. Yeah, you just have things like that in place.
Yes. Having those extra supports provided by the organisation is great. I think to extend on that a little bit, the safe story space is also about being acknowledged and recognised as an expert. I'm sure you've been in situations where you've been in a meeting or a working group and you're telling a quite personal story and people around the table are not paying attention. They're playing with their phones, they're talking to each other, shuffling papers. And that creates an unsafe environment for an advocate.
It does, and it's more harder to have your storytelling on Zoom because you don't know what someone else is doing. You don't know what someone's doing in the background is because you only see what the camera shows you. They could be picking up a phone or they could have switched their camera off to be doing something else. You don't know if people are paying attention or something like that, which sometimes it can affect people if they think you're not paying attention or just ignoring them. You know, it's really, you know, it's not pleasant to be ignored.
No, not pleasant at all. So in regards to barriers, I think we've covered pretty much all of them now. I'd just like to say thank you to Cameron Bloomfield for coming in and having a chat with us about barriers and the best ways of avoiding or removing them. Thank you, Cameron.
Thank you for inviting me along to the Voice of the Disabled podcast.
You can find out more voiceatthetable.com.au.
Welcome back to Backchat. We continue on with episode regarding a new wave in Gippsland, because we had such a great chat last time, and we'll just keep going now with Rachel Walters and Catherine Bartlett from New Wave Gippsland.
Thanks for having me back.
When did New Wave start, Rachel?
2009. We got to make sure people with disability, we have our own group, but we didn't have New Wave. It was just a combination of people with disabilities meeting every second Sundays just to have, you know, just something to get out of the place and have something to do. And it was with the outreach people. And anyway, we were having one of these days, and anyway, I got a phone call from Glyn Evans, and she's originally from Outreach. She was one of the bosses there. And anyway, next thing we get she got either email or phone call, one of the two, from Reinforce, wanted to come up and said we wanted to start our own self-advocacy group. And if we wanted to, we can, and then we just been discussing it on and off with Reinforce. And one day, Julie Presenton, which you guys might know, myself and Rob Clough, and we went to Seymour with the Reinforce group because I know they have a little place where they do a think tank there. Anyway, we were trying to look at what to call our group, and the place we started, it was not far from Pakapunya, where the army base is. I was waiting outside, saw a few kangaroos, and it was lovely seeing a group of kangaroos. Next thing, Julie drags me back in. She goes, I've got a name for our group. I said, and she goes, why don't we call our group New Wave? And because I did most of the talking, we left it in the hands of Arthur Rogers. And I was thinking, oh, gosh, I hope we get the funding. Next thing, I get a phone call from Glenn saying, we got the funding. Yes. So we've been New Wave ever since. That's the story how New Wave started.
Tell me about this YouTube video that we were watching before about an open letter to Vic Rhodes.
Well, we discussed it, I think, in a meeting, and saying how dangerous this road was in Commercial Road, what out the front of our office and it at the front of 2 day services, and it the car speed and see the signs probably 2 meters away, and it, oh, beauty, it's 60, left do 60 back, read them, saw it, and some of us take ages to cross, and we might be standing there at least 20 minutes, and we decided to write a open letter to Vic Rhodes explaining our issues and actually showing them how we crossed the road, all abilities, and then we got, I think, an email or a phone call saying we got it, like we're going to put it in. We got our article in the paper, then in the news, and even in the news again with Harriet Singh and PTV and the state government side of people.
Yes, it's a big win. We saw the video before, and the traffic is really bad. It's not bumper to bumper. It is a solid speed road, basically. Yeah. And as Catherine was saying, it was, on one side of the road is the bus stop. On the other side are the day services there on Commercial Road. And to get across that road, you're taking your life in your own hands. Have a look on YouTube and look up an open letter to Vic Rhodes from New Wave Gippsland. Thank you, Rachel. Thank you, Catherine, for imparting your wisdom with us.
Thank you.
And thank you, Aaron, for letting us do podcasts.
Welcome to Justin's Joke. Two scientists were on the ocean one day, and they came along and they discovered the Titanic in the ocean. You know what they found? They found for 100 years that Titanic swimming pool was still full.
Thanks to all the VAT Chat team and people who participated today, our co-producers, Anne Van Leerdam and Warren Loram. Special guest, Cameron Bloomfield, Rachel Walters and Catherine Bartlett for this week's Back Chat. Our editor and composer, Dan Sullivan. The VAT Chat working group who steer the direction of VAT Chat. And last but not least, Justin O'Brien for Justin's Joke.
VAT Chat podcast is part of the Voice at the Table training, voiceatthetable.com.au.